My name is Jonah Knight, and welcome to Roll to Metal. Hello, meddlers. We have had a run of scheduling issues lately, so as we get caught up, I'm going to release for you something a little different, a little fun. The following is the very first game that Willow, Holland, Mary, and I have played together, and it is a brand new game. Let us call it Shakespeare the Role-Playing Game. This is new. This is something that we've been writing. It is currently unfinished, but this is the very first playtest, and I think it's pretty fun and pretty good. So here's what you should expect. The players each pick a character from one of Shakespeare's plays, and together they create a new play, a sort of like a Shakespearean sequel.
Yeah.
So if you know Shakespeare, there are a bunch of Easter eggs. And if you don't know Shakespeare, don't worry about it. It's easy to follow along. So Shakespeare wrote his plays in a five-act structure. This is something that modern writers don't do. We tend to use three acts now. But Shakespeare used five. And this game is designed to unfold over five acts. Because this was the first game we played together, and because this is a play test, it's not as smooth as the Brindlewood Bay episodes that you might be used to. We didn't even take a minute for the players to introduce their characters, so let me do that for you now. Mary is playing Perdita from The Winter's Tale. Willow is playing Isabella from Measure for Measure. And Holland is playing Helena from A Midsummer Night's Dream. And the episodes that are released will be released as Episode 1, Act 1, Scene 1. Then Episode 2, Act 1, Scene 2. It'll be great, easy to follow. This is Act 1, Scene 0. It's not the kind of scene that would exist in a stage play. It's more exposition-y for the players, getting the characters to meet. It feels like an RPG scene to me. Act 1, Scene 1 does feel like the proper beginning to this as a big story. And I mentioned this later in the episode as we're playing, but all of y'all meddlers should probably know it now. This is what this is. The other interesting thing that you should expect is that this is a play test. I've left in all of the conversations about the rules. This version of the rules is very powered by the apocalypse. The version that we are working on now will be closer to Carved from Brindlewood. We do occasionally stop and talk about the rules. Sometimes we change them. Sometimes we develop them or take ideas that are out there and just solidify them and write them down. And I think these conversations are interesting. And if you, dear listener, are interested in designing or writing role-playing games, this should be pretty cool. And if you're only interested in Willow, Mary, and Holland acting ridiculous, well, we've got that too. I'm going to release these episodes weekly, and then when this play is done, we will return to Brindlewood Bay. There are just a few more mysteries left in our 3-year-long Brindlewood Bay Dark Conspiracy campaign, and we are getting towards that end, as you can tell. There's also another secret project that we're sort of working on in the background that will also, I think, be announced or released when this Shakespeare the Role-Playing Game play ends. So in a couple of months, we'll return to finishing Brindlewood Bay. We will begin the new secret thing that I'll tell you about later. And in the meantime, thank you all for listening. Thank you for hanging on, even when we have some scheduling issues and miss a week or two now and then. And I also want to say that the theme song for this is Homecoming. And you can find it on the site tabletopaudio.com. They're not quite a sponsor, but I really like what that guy's doing over there, so you should definitely check out tabletopaudio.com. Okay? Let's go.
Each of you has been traveling for some time. You are on your way to the wedding of the son of the Marquis Charlot. Here's what you know when you started out. The Marquis is the governor of this region of Western France. He is in the marquis is a form of nobility. Marquis are about three steps down from the king. So while he's not, this is why I give this to you in episode zero. he is not directly involved with the governing of the country, but this is definitely his region. And there's some sort of family connection, but this is very confusing. And most people can't keep track of these things. His son, Roger Chalot, is due to be married in 4 days' time. It's probably been a different time for each of you to travel to get to this point. But this inn is on the western bank of a pretty significant river, of which there is no name. And after you spend the evening here, tomorrow the plan is to cross to the east side of the river and have two more additional days' journey to get to the Chateau de Pobla, Pobella. Chateau de Pobella. The chateau where the Marquis lives, around it has grown up a pretty nice town, so you have heard. There's a lot there, but you're still a little bit a ways away from it. This is a pretty big inn on a fairly busy road. Though, with all of the traveling going towards the wedding, maybe it's not as busy as you would have thought. There was certainly room for each of you and your parties to be accommodated here. And so our episode zero, or not episode zero, our scene zero, is the inn, which you would begin a game with, but not necessarily a play. So this is a decently populated room. There is a fireplace. It is the end of the traveling day. I don't think they had bouncers back then, but there is a sort of a man stationed at the door with a sort of an old sword that looks like it was maybe pretty seldom used. And the innkeepers and their staff are taking care of everyone. So, between the three of you, who likely arrived to dinner first?
Let's just say that, Perdita will arrive first.
Who are you sitting with? And when people look at your table, what do they see?
I'm sitting with my traveling companions, Paulina, Camillo, my adoptive brother, Oren, and a few handmaidens.
Who is your favorite? Who is your confidant in this group?
Oren.
And when people in this dining room take a look at your table, what do they see? This is Western France. Do they see your signs of your city, of your ethnicity? What are they seeing when they look at your table?
Sorry, when they look at the table or like what are we wearing, basically?
Yeah.
Okay. Perdita is dressed in you would look at her and she would have like insignia. She'd be wearing whatever symbols of the Kingdom of Sicilia. So she's clearly a princess of Sicilia. Paulina and Camillo would probably be wearing things reflective of also of Sicilia. And then Oren would just be wearing like general nobleman clothes because he's just very excited about being a noble person now.
How long have you been traveling to get to this point?
Plus a week.
Has it all been on land? Have you had a ship? Have you gone across the water to come here?
We have. I mean, Shakespeare never cared about geography, right?
Right.
We totally were on a ship. And unfortunately, I was seasick the entire time.
So it has not been an easy traveling.
No. I'm very happy to be in a sitting at a table that is not moving and knitting and waiting for supper.
And who would arrive next?
I think Isabella and her party would likely be coming down. And Helena might be in my party. Did we decide on that?
I think we did decide on that.
Okay, actually. Yes. Helena is among my party.
Okay. Yes.
Okay. But so there's Isabella, and she is dressed befitting of a noble woman of her station, but it is all black and simple. She has a veil over her head, reminiscent of a nun, though just not quite, because she is not, though she makes sure that she composes herself in a manner that just gives off that vibe. And she has a couple of serving women with her. There's Maud, who is a younger woman, dressed, well, nobly enough, but somewhat ragged in her own way. And Clara, who is a little bit more simply dressed and a bit more demure, a bit more head down. Isabella's brother is also tagging along as a guard, though once he was invited on this journey, he also invited a bunch of his servants. So he probably has an entourage of men and people that Isabella was not too excited about them tagging along, but that is how it is when you invite Claudio with you. And Helena may be in my party as well.
Helena, how did you end up being attached to Isabella's trip?
Well, it's a bit of a funny story, actually. She had been visiting Helena's previous abode, and assisted in helping me take an extended vacation from said abode, which is gentle speak for she helped me break out of the asylum I was in. And I actually was not sure if we had decided on sticking together, but I do believe that if Isabella had mentioned she'd been on her way to this wedding, it was more likely that Helena would have accompanied her, as she was headed this way as well, with a fairly single-minded attitude. The woman that Isabella met and spoke to in the asylum likely became more focused and determined the closer they got to this wedding, and now she is very internal, very focused, not speaking as much as she had been at first. And she's almost always fiddling with something, just kind of, her energy is very high, though she's trying not to show it.
And how long has your group been on the road?
Well, Isabella was the widowed Duchess of Vienna. So, it's likely been several weeks on the road if she traveled directly from there. Though when I took you from the asylum, did you come with me to Vienna? And then I don't know, how long have we been associated, do you think?
I don't think it's been too long. Again, geography is not my strong suit, nor is it Shakespeare's. But she would have been somewhere a little bit outside of Athens. Whatever that means for us, it has been that amount of time. I think she would have stuck with her the moment that they broke out. I could see it being a few weeks, okay, for sure. 2 to 3.
I got you out of the asylum, and
thank you for that.
I mean, it would have taken longer than that long to get from there to where we are, and I probably wasn't stopping at the asylum on the way to the wedding, but
just for a quick little,
just a little quick,
quick detour,
little quick asylum
little errand,
hop.
Yeah,
or just asylum hopping on the way to the wedding.
Yeah. Isabella's hobby.
Kind of. Regardless, we've been traveling together. I think we probably stopped in Vienna. That's sort of like doot doot, kind of a right angle, sort of. And then I had the wedding to go to, and so Helena tagged along.
Right. I didn't seem very interested in the wedding until I learned a little bit more about the guest list. And incidentally, in Vienna, if at all possible, I think Helena would have purchased a very nice dress for said wedding, which would have happened anyway before, you know, after living in whatever type of uniform she would have had in the asylum. But this one might have been a little bit more extravagant than you were expecting. Just a little bit. Just a little show-offy. Just a little.
Well, this is actually probably one of the nicest inns that you've stayed at on your journey. It's at a key spot, so it is used to hosting various forms of nobility, whether from the royal family. Nicolette, one of the owners, is very happy to talk about the various members of the royal family, of various royal families that have stayed here over time. And the dinner is fine. It is as good as you can hope for at an inn such as this. And the evening goes on, and it probably feels very nice to actually relax for a little while, because tomorrow you will have to wake up fairly early. It is another 2 full days of travel. That is what everyone says. So there's a bard over by the fireplace, and there are other travelers here. And at a certain point, there is a, after dinner is done and socializing has begun, and conversations become a bit less stressed and a little more relaxed in the room, there comes a moment around when you're thinking that perhaps this is about the time to turn in for the night, when the door opens and all of the folks who look like they live around here, who are not travelers, sort of stop, and kind of there's a bit of a tension that you can feel when this particular gentleman enters the room and he steps inside, takes off his riding gloves, leaves the door open behind him, and I'll just call him a bouncer. The bouncer sort of wakes up a little bit from his chair, scowls, shuts the door behind this man, who walks up to the window to the kitchen. It's not really a window. It's over the bar. And then starts talking in hushed tones with Guy, who is the other owner, married to Nicolette, of this inn. And so suddenly there's a bit of tension. And a number of folks, as your dinner has finished, members of your wedding party, not your wedding party, your traveling parties, have gotten up and started moving about as they recognize folks from other delegations that happen to be in the room. You have an opportunity here to sort of relax a bit, to have conversations before it is time for bed. Because you definitely recognize that there are folks in this room that are important in some way, whether you know who they are or not.
I think I would turn to Isabella and see if she recognized any of the others, the other individuals of note in this bar. Is there anyone that you recognize that we might be, that we might meet at the... at that gathering you mentioned, that wedding? I don't know much about that wedding myself, but I very much appreciate you allowing me to tag along with you. Just for fun, you know, just...
Of course.
Just for fun. No well, reason at all. Just
yes,
fun.
As you have mentioned many times, no other reason is what you have been saying.
Right.
Mm-hmm. As for the guest list at the party, the new Duke of Vienna, who sent me here, insists that there will be several noblemen, all sorts of higher ups. He, as I've told you before, he just wants to marry me off again, so I won't be living in his palace anymore. I have no interest in his schemes. I've heard several names that I don't... Do I know any names? Any names of the guests that I would feel like sharing?
I think that you certainly recognize delegations. You know, there are nobles from all over Europe that are sort of converged here. Because the Marquis is related to the king, anyone who has something to gain from having the King of France look favorably on their homeland has probably sent someone. So whether or not it is sort of, it might be up to you whether or not you recognize anyone in the room, but you would probably recognize banners and crests and things like that.
Yes. Well, I tend to avoid nobility as much as I can while still achieving my ends. So I, my dear Helena, I can say they're from France. I see a party from Bohemia, Sicilia, but in my pursuits, I deal with those who don't fly banners. So the status of the people around me is of no concern.
Should we go introduce ourselves then?
If you must.
I certainly don't know anything about social status or any sort of manners beforehand or anything like that. But, you know, if you think that might be a good idea, maybe just to check in and see what everyone else is doing at this this party. Yes, that's exactly, that sounds correct.
Mm-hmm. If you're so inclined, do
great.
Go.
Mm-hmm. She walks away. I walk away.
Okay. Isabella does not stop you.
Just kind of meandering. Very likely would go towards any young women, less likely to introduce herself to random gentlemen.
Isabella probably nodded when she said, oh, there's a delegation from here and there's a delegation from there. And so when she nodded towards Bohemia, there was a young woman there. She probably also nodded towards a delegation from Spain that looked like they're all older gentlemen. But it does look like a number, the folks that have been down here at dinner who look like they are somebody and they are not, you know, the servants in their delegation, have begun getting up and moving about the room. There are a few that are deep in their cups there, and there is some guffawing and some of the gentlemen, especially the younger ones, are getting louder about their enjoyment of the evening. There are young women that are sort of look like they were part of the serving class from the different delegations that are slowly making their way out of the room. It's almost time to end the evening. If we're not needed here, we're not going to stay here. But it does look like there are a few still around.
I think if any of the young women look particularly personable, I would make my way towards them. And if not, I might, I don't quite have a move to gossip, which might be my problem. I was definitely, I'm looking to gossip, if that's any help. Anyone that looks like they might be forthcoming in information or might have information.
Well, the young woman at the Bohemia delegation table looks like she has some sort of rustic charm and that she enjoys talking. She is talking to one of the older ladies that she's with. Many of the other members of her delegation have gotten up and are socializing with other men around the room.
Okay. She looks like she knows people. Like, maybe not necessarily, you know, in a hoity-toity sense, but of, like, she's a woman of the people.
She does, yes. That is
wonderful.
Exactly how she looks.
That is exactly what I'm looking for. I walk up and introduce myself. Hello, I am Helena of Athens. I am pleased to make your acquaintance. It is wonderful to meet you. Might I ask your name?
Yes, it is a pleasure to meet you. I'm Perdita of Sicilia. And then I think Paulina clears her throat. Paulina clears her throat. I am Perdita, princess of Sicilia and future queen to Sicilia and Bohemia. It is my greatest pleasure to make your acquaintance. I'm very clearly trying to be proper.
I curtsy a little bit deeper than I was expecting to, so it might look a little stilted. I might trip a little bit, and then collect myself. Your Majesty, it is a pleasure. Are you in town for anything in particular, or are you just passing by?
Yes, we are on our way to a wedding. Please sit with us. Sit.
A wedding! What a coincidence! I am as well. My party over there. We are all on our way to a wedding. What wedding are you headed to? Do you know anyone else there?
We're headed to the wedding of the son of the Marquis. Something, something,
Shalom.
Something.
Shalom. So sorry.
Shalom.
I'm asking everyone else.
I'm just kidding.
From this information we just got.
We are on our way. I literally was like, I'm going to need somebody to put that in a chat box.
It's Charlotte, but Shalom.
Shalom. Oh.
Shalom.
Okay. Yes, we are on our way to the wedding of the son of the Marquis de Shalom. Paulina just rolled her eyes.
That is such a crazy happenstance, coincidence that we are at the same place now, meeting and going to the same place again soon. Tell me all about yourself. All of it. Just all of it.
Just all of it. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's a lot.
So sorry.
Wow. Pause. Cause like, what?
I'm
what?
So
okay.
Sorry.
No. You're fine. I as a player
why.
Am now having a moment of like, would she have been coached to make the story as short as possible? Like, oh, I can't talk poorly of my family. So I'm the princess of a place and I'm going to be the queen of the two places. And I'm learning so much. And now I'm on this trip to. Or would she be like, well, I was left on the mountainside.
Whoops.
In Bohemia. Because my father thought my mother was unfaithful. And then he put her in a prison where she died. Like, what?
So you feel unprepared to answer this question. And you look to Paulina. And she looks at you expectantly. And you look back to this young woman who just came up to you. Then you look back to Paulina, gives you a, go on, you know what to say. And you're trying to put words together when you hear sort of raised voices from the bar. And this man who came in before that sort of put everyone on edge seems to be yelling at another man who's in the room who also looks like maybe he's not with an official delegation. The first man who came in who put everyone on edge, I should describe him. Let's say he has a very flamboyant mustache. This man with the mustache says, "We cannot keep waiting. The time is now, Bertrand." And Bertrand says, "Jean-Marie, you have said this before and again, and you will say it forever, and you must listen to me. No one is with you. You are alone in this." And Jean-Marie shoves this man who takes a few steps back and falls into your table, Perdita, knocking a mug of whatever Paulina had been drinking into her lap. And so now she is wet and stands right up, and suddenly your brother is there and is very unhappy with his hand on his sword.
Isabella, I would approach, seeing that this conflict has occurred. I look like a nun. I have a bearing about me that I hope will make these men stop being fools. though they never cease to be in my experience. So I approach them and I say, "You are fools. Stop this madness." Or something.
The man who is pushed back into the table, his face has gone very red. And he is not listening to you. He is looking at this man with the mustache that shoved him. And they seem to be really staring at each other. Like if they had something in their hands right now, it would be used as a weapon no matter what it was. Orin, this man who was suddenly at the table caring for this older lady who is now wet, did hear you and looks to you and then looks to this lady who is wet. And the man with the mustache steps forward, completely ignoring everyone except for Bertrand, and says, "If you do not do as I say, and if you do not take action soon, it will be too late."
And this man and their demands and ultimatums, I am sick of this.
Can I try a move?
Yes. Please use a move.
I would like to use gentle tongue. Mm-hmm. So my honeyed words can incite a riot between friends or calm an argument. I'm declaring my intent to change the relationship between the two parties, NPCs, either for the better or worse, and then describing my actions and then rolling. So what I would like to happen is I would like to put them into a tentative truce where Mustache Man backs off or believes that he at least has a chance at convincing this guy in the future, but that chance does not have to be right now. And then for the other guy, I would like to, I don't know if it has to be the same convincing argument, but for the other guy, I'd like him to feel as though Mustache Man is just drunk and is just stirring up trouble again, but it's not a huge deal. It's not like this is a turning point or anything. Just trying to like calm the tensions a bit.
Okay. Give us a little bit of your speech and then roll plus dignity.
Right. Okay. So I step up and I put on my my softest calming smile that I can, and I say, "Gentlemen, this is a night for merriment. We're all friends here. We are on our way to a beautiful ceremony. There's going to be excitement. There's going to be music and laughter and dance. And shouldn't we be embodying that sort of emotion now? Can't we all be friends here? We all understand where the other's coming from. Don't we?"
Roll plus dignity.
All right. Oh boy. You're not going to believe me. Mm-hmm. I just got double sixes. So that is 14 for the first roll.
Woo!
All right.
I can show you. I know you don't.
No. I will never doubt your reported rolls.
I've got Slytherin dice, so I feel like I always need to show because I'm worried that my dice are going to cheat for me.
I mean, that's legitimate. So this man who's been pushed down, Bertram, he looks right at you and looks as though he has noticed you for the first time. As you speak, his expression softens and he is really looking at you and really listening. And then this other man, Jean-Marie, who pushed him, sort of notices as you're speaking, as you look back and forth between the two of them, Jean-Marie wasn't listening to you at first. He was very focused. And then when he saw that Bertrand was listening to you, he turned and he looked at you as well. And there's something that Perdita and Isabella notice. Helena had such a connection with these two men that seemed to come out of nowhere. Jean-Marie steps back and says, "Very well. Not tonight, Bertrand. Not tonight. But soon enough, you must pick a side." And so the mustached Jean-Marie walks towards the door. And the bouncer initially fell right out of his chair when this started and is now standing at attention as Jean-Marie walks out and slams the door behind him. And Bertrand turns back to you, Helena. I am so sorry. I am so sorry for our behavior. It was Jean-Marie. He doesn't listen. But I am so sorry. And he turns to the rest of you as well. Oren has taken his hand off of his sword. Polina has not even stayed around. She's like, I am wet. I am leaving. And so you see the back of her as she is gone. She's not even staying around for an apology. And Oren is still a little bit cranky. I don't care who you are. I don't care what your business is, but you don't do this around women. You must treat women better than this. You must pay attention to your surroundings. And Bertrand hangs his head. I know. I'm very sorry. I'm very sorry. And he looks as though he wants to just back away and leave.
Perhaps in the spirit of friendship, we could get around for this table and perhaps have something sent up to that kind woman who excused herself after this little altercation arose.
And Oren nods and says, "That's right. I should see to her to make sure she's all right. I will tend to her." And he walks to find Nicolette to see if he can have something special sent up to Polina. So the three of you are there with Bertrand looking embarrassed, chagrined, and just trying to make eye contact to see, is it okay if I leave now?
I think that's fine. I think we're all right. Are we all right, ladies? I kind of gesture over to Isabella and Perdita.
Yes, we thank you for your apology.
I think we are just fine. And you know what would be even better? Perhaps a round of drinks for us. I think that would make everything all fine.
He looks a little deer in the headlights. I shouldn't use that. That's anachronistic. He looks a little
deer in the lamplight.
Deer in the lamplights. Deer in the bonfire lights. You've made this request. And then maybe because he seems even more embarrassed, if that's possible, you then notice that maybe he looks like he doesn't have a lot of money.
Oh.
That maybe he's not part of a delegation. And you're right. You're right, miss. Okay, let me see what I can do. And he walks away towards the bar.
Oh, good sir, wait.
No, it's really fine.
And
I must. I must. Honor demands it. I'm sorry. I'll be back.
Or perhaps honor demands get yourself a drink and join us. Conversation is better than that.
No, I should not. I cannot.
Sir, actually, yes. I would so love to know what that argument was about. Here. I hand him a coin and say, please get yourself and us some beverages and come back to the table and sit with us a spell.
Something passes his face that is like, he sees the coin, which is not from around here, I assume. Unless, did you stop at a French bank when you got here? Are these foreign coins?
Sure. Let's say we did something so that we would have spending money.
Okay. So he looks at the coin. And there's a moment of like, wow, this is a lot of money. And then suddenly, like a brief moment of suspicion, perhaps. But then he's back to himself. He says, okay, yes, absolutely, I will. And he sort of bows as though he's maybe a servant. He says, yes, I'll be back in a moment. And he
bows,
and he bows again. And then he goes to look for one of the owners or the servers.
I turn to Helena. You diffused that situation marvelously.
I was not expecting that to work as well as it did. I have to be honest with you.
No, those men? You did that?
No. Nope. Not at all. I have never met either of them before in my life.
That was amazing.
I don't think it will ever happen again like that.
I cannot speak in such eloquent language as that.
Oh, it is only words. That is all. That's really all I can do myself. You seem to be eloquent in the ways of people, though. You seem to be very personable. I found that I was drawn to you on our little turn around this inn for social gatherings' sake.
That is such a kind thing to say. I do love to be around people and parties as well. Let's sit and have a gaze around the room. I'm sure we can have some fun conversations about the other patrons of the inn.
I wholeheartedly agree. Isabella, will you be joining us?
Why not? I suppose. That's all I say. Isabella doesn't really enjoy being among so many people who are, like, fancy or just so many people, unless they are, like, people she knows well. So she's kind of just, you know, she has this stern air of sort of distant authority, but she's uncomfortable.
I turn to sort of whisper in her ear and say, if we make friends now, that means we can spend more time speaking to people we know at the wedding than to people we don't.
I suppose so. I have no intention of speaking to so many people at the wedding, but your logic holds up, so I'll follow you.
Bertrand returns. Nicolette is right behind him with a number of drinks. She passes them out. He says, I really shouldn't stay, ladies. I'm very sorry for any trouble that I may have inadvertently caused you. But thank you. Thank you very much for your gracious excusing of my behavior.
Oh, not at all. Are you sure you're all right, though? That seemed like a very, very intense conversation between you and that man.
Oh, well, it's nothing you would be interested in.
You might be surprised.
I'm very happy to have facilitated your drinks. If you get the sense that you should, if you want to stop him from leaving, you might have to do something to stop him from leaving.
What do we do, guys?
I don't know. I was really thinking that the join us for a drink would be good.
I was like, look at us.
Come drink with us.
Gals, we defuse that situation. Would that be potentially under social manipulation?
It sure might.
Well, I hate to roll again, but I'm fairly skilled in dignity and social cues and such. What do you guys think? Would anyone else like to roll, or?
I think it makes sense that you initiated that interaction with him and you formed a connection. I think it only follows that you would have a better angle at convincing him to stay.
Lovely. Okay. Okay. So for social manipulation, when attempting to convince a skeptic, describe your approach and then roll plus dignity.
What is your newest tact to get him to have a seat and have a drink with you?
I mean, I really thought the drink would be enough. maybe turning on the charm a little teeny bit. Not quite to the point of it being overt or scandalous, but just continuing to smile at him and possibly... I think this is pretty intense at the time, but I was thinking like a very tentative shoulder touch, but that might be a lot.
I mean, that could be interpreted many ways, but you can sure try.
I want me some information. I know.
Isabella can jump in. I might, with my strict air of authority or whatever can say, come now, I'm interested in the issues that sprung forth such a kerfuffle. Do sit, and I would like to hear your tale.
Roll plus dignity.
Oh, me?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Oh, no, not dignity.
Unless you want to do help out, and then I do it.
Oh.
We could go crazy.
I mean, I did just roll, and it's not great.
Okay.
That's all right. How did it go?
Let's see. That is a that's a six.
As Isabella speaks, he turns his attention from Helena, who perhaps he would have been more susceptible to a gentler bit of persuasion, but he looks like maybe oh, you're not the one that he wanted to talk. And he looks back and forth and says, No, I. And it's sort of directed to Isabella. No, I couldn't stay here. I couldn't stay here with you and drink. And then, like, looks to the other two, is like, oh, I didn't mean that as mean as it sounded. But the three of you are on your way to the wedding, and that's fine. I wish you good travels. And he bows and quickly leaves the inn.
Dang, Flabbit.
And Nicolette returns. Says, oh, he didn't stay. She's starting to clean up the table. I thought he looked like he was going to sit down and talk with you, but I guess not.
Well, I believe he had more pressing matters. Perhaps we will meet him again. He seems a very interesting fellow.
Bertrand? No, he is not interesting. You've just had a stroke of luck with him not staying with you. He is in here often, and believe you me, that is not a very interesting fellow. Could bore the socks off a bear.
Do you know what that altercation was about?
I'm interested in that as well.
Okay. And she leans in. She says, this may have been the source of gossip that you were looking for earlier.
Yes.
Well, since you're not from the area, you wouldn't know it, but I'll tell you, there are a number of people in this region that are quite unhappy with the Marquis's leadership style. And there are many who believe, she sort of looks around, okay, and she's in a hushed voice, she leans in even more. The Marquis's son, Roger, you probably know that he's 17th in line for the kingship, should anything happen to the other 16 people before him. Well, just in the last month, he moved up to 17 because three other people in line for the crown mysteriously died. Bertrand and Jean-Marie are some of these people think that there's something suspicious happening and that maybe the Marquis's son who, okay, I wouldn't necessarily speak ill of him if he were here, but I would not want him to be our king. He does not seem to be very motivated. He does not seem to be to have the faculties to really lead our nation, our kingdom. There are a number of people who perhaps wish that they had more influence over who is in line for the king, for the crown.
And they believe that Roger de Chalon is perhaps involved in the deaths of those nobles who were ahead of him in line?
Oh, well, I wouldn't know anything about that. All I know is what I hear around here, which is that people are unhappy and that there are suspicions and rumors every day. Jean-Pierre, Jean-Marie, and Bertrand and their ilk come in here and have new stories to tell about how this whole region is not being managed as well as it could. But, of course, as you would know, should they act out of place and act in any way to interfere with the Marquis, well, that would be treason. So they can't do that right out in the open.
My goodness, that is... That is quite a lot. I knew that it would be the right choice to come to talk to you. You seemed like someone who knew exactly what was going on all over.
She pulls the chair out and sits down. And I'll tell you something else.
Please do.
You ladies look like you have traveled far to come here for this wedding. There have been travelers nonstop for 2 or 3 weeks now, just going towards this event. All sorts of royalty, all sorts of dignitaries. But what I have heard is that the bride-to-be, no one has met her. I hear that she is from some far-off place and that she hasn't even arrived yet. And the wedding is in 4 days.
No one has met her, including her groom-to-be?
Well, I suppose he must have met her because he was the one who returned announcing his engagement.
Ah.
This was a year ago.
A year ago? And she's from somewhere far off? That is so interesting.
It's very mysterious. But
very.
These royals do what these royals do, I suppose. Can't trust any of them.
No. I mean,
hear, hear.
Certainly not.
I certainly don't.
I'm leaning in because this is like the best story I've ever heard. They were arguing about taking some kind of action. I don't suppose there are rumors about what that action might be.
Oh, well, Jean-Marie and Bertrand, they talk big, but I'm certain they would not do anything to interfere with the king or the marquis or even this wedding. If they know it's good for them, they shouldn't do anything.
Wow.
The other owner of the inn guy walks up to Nicola and says, "Come on, we can't just sit down. We have customers. We have customers. There are drinks that must be brought out." She says, "Ah!"
She was being wonderful entertainment. This is such a lovely abode you have.
Thank you, thank you. He's very deferential. He bows and says, "Thank you. We always appreciate such, we have been blessed with such members of the royal family, such as yourself, who have come by on the way here and there. We always provide the best service."
I can see that, and I understand why this would be the perfect stop before a royal wedding.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Thank you. I appreciate it. Nicolette. Fine. She growls at him and gets up and says, "Well, it was very nice talking to you."
"Wonderful to meet you."
She sort of nods and goes to wait on some other folks who are waiting for their drinks.
Well, that was fascinating. I wonder who the bride-to-be is, if she exists at all.
I gasp.
I'm thinking back to that one time where I was going to lie to the dad that I have, that I didn't know it was my dad, that I was a Libyan princess or whatever. And I chuckle to myself.
That is certainly a lot going on besides the wedding. What do you make of all of that? Do you think there'll be some sort of foul play before the wedding is to come to be?
I think anything is possible. When the government and its corrupt men are involved, all sorts of nonsense may occur. And those at the mercy of it are never the better at the end.
It does sound like the people are desperately unhappy, so something interesting could happen from that.
Certainly. Unless the bride-to-be is someone of the people as well, such as yourself, I cannot see how they could mend those chasms that they have apparently created.
She would have to be a very kind and genteel woman.
Well, I, for one, am so excited to find out what's next.
This is going to be a grand event, to be certain.
Yeah, Isabella is just thinking about the bride-to-be, like, Does the bride-to-be even know that she's a bride-to-be? Is this arranged and she doesn't know? Because, oof, that just seems like a thing that the men in Isabella's life would arrange, and it's... She doesn't trust the machinations of men.
Lights out.